and welcome to What's My Tagline. I'm your host, Carol Flagg. Thanks for tuning in. On this show, we put our microphone in front of a variety of industry experts to understand the factors that impact messaging, branding, marketing, sales, and reputation in healthcare. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at hashtag What's My Tagline and follow me at Carol Flagg. Back with me again for a third episode of this show, our national sales trainer, speaker, and author of The Perfect Close, James Muir, and Jane Bogue, the Chief Growth Officer at Xtelligent Media. On this episode, we conclude this three-part interview talking about the techniques and science behind The Perfect Close. You can listen to part one and part two of our conversation on demand by visiting healthcarenowradio.com. James, Jane, it's like the band is back together again. Thanks for coming on the show once again.
Let's jam.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We got our own little virtual garage band here.
All right. Time to rock.
Well, we're going to go on tour.
I know, right? Well, I'm going to entertain that idea. So before we actually get into the conversation, just remind our audience real quick about your backgrounds. James, I'll start with you.
So I've been in healthcare for over 30 years, started out in RevCycle. My father owned a chain of RevCycle companies back in the olden days. We actually called them billing services. And that's where I learned about medical RevCycle, straight out of high school, basically. And then I used to go with the sales team as a subject matter expert until we opened up an office in a remote location. And that's when I got drafted into sales. So I'm basically an accidental salesperson. And from there, I spent 10 years working for a well-known provider of revenue cycle management software as an application specialist. And then after that, I spent another 16 years with NextGen Healthcare Information Systems, where we did electronic health records and RevCycle software, as well as full RevCycle outsourcing. And then today I specialize in helping healthcare organizations with complex B2B sales processes.
Excellent. Jane, I've known you for many years now, and you have a fascinating background. So give us the CliffsNotes version. It's really interesting.
So I've been in sales most of my professional career as well. I started not in healthcare technology, but more on the media side. So I grew up in the trade show business back in the 90s and was selling booth space and grew through that organization to a point where I was running a group of shows and grew into sales management, then migrated over to the digital media world and was working for a B2C company, a newspaper actually, on their digital side, trying to drive growth and change through the sales organizations and embracing getting really traditional salespeople to embrace the internet and embrace digital media and embrace digital opportunities for their clients. And then I migrated back over into the B2B space, which I call a kinder, gentler world, ended up in healthcare. Which has been a great opportunity. I spent some time with the HIMSS organization and then been in my most recent role for about a year plus with Xtelligent Healthcare Media, really helping to grow their organization and develop new products. But, you know, it all comes down to the health of your sales and your sales process. And so I spend an awful lot of my time still selling, coaching and really trying to make sure that we've got a healthy process in place in order to make sure that we grow at the level that we need to.
I would be remiss if I didn't point out that Jane is from Maine, and so she knows how to fish, and also that back in her history, she actually did a little radio, so it's got that great radio focus.
DJ Jane. Jane
from Maine.
I did not know that.
Oh gosh!
Now we're back to music again. So James, let's kick this conversation off with The Perfect Close. When was the book published, and what is it in a nutshell?
Well, it came out actually at the very end of 2016. That's when it first came out. And there's five different variations of The Perfect Close, but basically in the book, we cover a closing process that is just two questions. It's zero pressure. It's non-confrontational, and it's about 95% successful each time. And when we say 95% successful, it means we're either going to get an advance where we move the sale forward in a little way, or we're going to get a close each time. And so Those two questions have just proved to be very facilitative for all different types of people in sales, even subject matter experts that don't really want to be in sales, or entrepreneurs that don't want to, you know, they don't like that part of it. But that's essentially what's in the book itself, is just how to execute that that close.
And who's it suited for? Is it, it's really B2B versus B2C, right?
It is. I would say, you know, it'll actually work on any kind of sale at any given stage, but because more complex sales, what is true is that about 9 out of 10 encounters don't end in either a win or a no sale. What you end up with is either what Neil Rackham would call an advance or a continuation. And so 9 out of 10 of your meetings in a complex sale, you're not really going to close the deal. You're just going to move the step, the process forward. So Perfect Close is very much well suited to a more complex B2B type of a sale, as opposed to a simple sale that, you know, like a retail sale. It'll still work in retail, but you're not really going to move the sale forward in a little way, because you basically got one shot in that. So I would say a simple sale can still benefit, but not as much as a more complex sale.
Right. And Jane, I know, obviously anybody listening to the previous episode knows that you actually bought the Perfect Close and distributed it amongst your staff quite a while ago. You've known James for, I think, 6 months or going on a year now. So talk a little bit about how your sales team has employed the technique and what the response has been.
So it's interesting, because I've been here for a year, and I've been doing a lot of restructuring of the sales team, and there it is very much a consultative approach. I mean, these questions that that James has, you know, and the process that he outlines is very much conversational. It's not salesy, and those two questions, with the reps that I have that use this technique and apply it consistently, they have a demonstrable pipeline that is accurate, that moves forward, that they can report back on status updates with 100% accuracy, and is more likely to close. And with the individuals that may not have had the same type of training, in the background, that we're continuing to reinforce certain chapters in the book and certain techniques in the book to get them to embrace this. But I mean, hands down, I can't say enough about how the techniques apply to my world and how effective they are when used as outlined, because it allows somebody who's not necessarily pointed, and pointed is probably not the right way, but a lot of people, the biggest challenge salespeople have typically is asking for the sale, and this is a way to ask for the sale, but to put the control almost in the hands of the client by saying, what do you think makes sense for next steps? It's so easy for someone to deliver, and so easy for the client to accept. It really reinforces that partnership, which is what we're trying to develop with our clients as we continue to develop as an organization. And move more towards a solution and a consultative sales approach. But we're selling more solutions than we are selling products now. So this has been, incredibly effective for our team.
So, James, Jane is alluding to these two questions. So share with us what those two questions are, and let's talk about that.
Sure. So there's actually 5 different variations of the Perfect Close, and we actually covered 2 of the questions of the most basic version in the last time we got together. But just for this time, the first question is, does it make sense to X, where X is your ideal advance? So like an example, that would be, does it make sense for us to schedule an assessment to see what our best options are? In that example, the assessment would be the ideal advance that we're asking for. And there's basically only 2 things they can respond to it. They're going to say yes, or they're going to say no. And if they say yes, then great, we got our ideal advance and we're off to the races. If they say no, then we're going to ask the second question. And in the most basic version, we're just going to throw the ball back to the client, and we're going to say, all right, well, what do you think is a good next step then? And what I can tell you after hundreds of ride-alongs is that in 90% of cases, the client will actually just suggest a very logical and appropriate next step for where they're at, right now in their sales process or in their buying process. And so the important thing to remember here is that the best close is really the one that paces at the rate that the person's ready to is ready for. It's when we try to move the sale faster than the client's ready for that it starts to feel like manipulation to them. But those two very simple questions, and it's easy to misinterpret how why they're so effective, is that does it make sense to X at its core is a timing question. It's not, will you buy my stuff? It's, does it make sense for us to talk about doing something or schedule something? And so it telegraphs what you're thinking without actually asking for that thing. And so they can't actually reject your course of action. They can only reject the timing of it. And that just leaves you on emotionally much higher ground, regardless of what they say.
You know, you're simplifying this, of course, down to these two questions. And obviously, there's a lot more to it than that, because there is a social science behind this as well, correct? Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that's critical throughout the whole sales process, regardless of what kind of sale you're in, is that intent matters more than technique. And that's a surprising revelation for a lot of salespeople. And the reason for that is because in the first few seconds that of any encounter, right, any, it doesn't matter whether it's a sales encounter or not, people make two judgments. They try to decipher what the other person's intent is, right? What's our intentions? Is this a good guy or is this a bad guy, right? And then the second thing they try to do is they determine the competency of the person, and that is their ability to enact whatever their intention is. And a lot of folks think in sales, that is, they think that if they can just convince the other person that they're actually the best at solving a problem, that they're automatically going to gain favor and they're going to win the deal. And so that what they're doing is they're focusing on competency. But the truth is while competency is important, in selling situations, people weigh intent more. And the reason for that is because when it comes to selling situations, especially in complex sales, there's really no question that the salesperson could potentially take advantage of the buyer. And that's because the buyer can never really completely understand all the dimensions of the complex solution. So the seller has the capacity to take advantage of the buyer, and the buyer knows that. And so for that reason, they are going to weigh that intent far, far more heavily. And the kind of the funny thing that's interesting is that as it turns out, we're actually always transmitting our intentions all the time anyway. It's unintentional that we do it, but we do it. And there's three different ways that we do that. There's something called mirror neurons, micro-expressions, and paralanguage. And mirror neurons are fascinating. When we see somebody else experiencing something, we actually feel the same stuff in ourselves. And that's why you can go to a movie and see something in a movie and then cry, is because you're actually feeling what's happening in the show, right? When you see something. And so the short version is that when we see actions and demeanor of another person, we're actually feeling the same things ourselves. So there's this invisible level of communication that's happening. And then micro expressions are just as interesting. These are these super brief facial expressions that are like 1/15th to 1/25th of a second. And they're they're impossible to hide. Yet people pick up on these expressions, even though oftentimes they can't articulate it. They mostly describe it as a feeling. But again, this level of communication is completely invisible, and it conveys our intent, whether we're wanting it to or not. And then the last is paralanguage, and people know more about this. It's an unspoken communication that comes across in the tonality of our voice. And a good example of this would be, you know, when you ask your significant other if they're okay, and they say, "I'm fine." But you can tell by the way they said fine that they're definitely not fine.
They're not fine. Right.
Right. So, and we have
have experienced that before.
Yeah. So, we have a little more control over that one, but it's still mostly an unconscious behavior, about 80% unconscious. So you've got these three invisible levels of communication that are conveying our intention to prospective buyers. And remember, they're weighing that intent more than our competency, right, to solve the problem. And so that's why I say that intent matters so much more than technique. And so we spent a decent amount of time in the book sharing this, and people go, "Well, for heaven's sakes, this is a book about closing. Why are you telling me all about this? You know, why are you spending all this time talking about intention?" And the reason is because you could, execute the technique flawlessly, but if your intent is messed up, then in most cases, the show's off for you. And on the flip side, if your intent is right in the right place, you could screw the technique up all over the place and it's still going to work out, right? So that's some of the science and the psychology behind why it works. I mean, one way to think about it is if you put a matrix together, and we should probably give you maybe an image you could put in the show notes or something, is on one matrix you have competence, you know, and then on the other matrix you have warmth. and where we have a person that is both warm and competent, that is the, that's the box that we're looking for. And people describe people that are both warm and competent, they have, you know, the words that describe that the best are admiration and respect. Okay. Now the flip is if we're over focusing on competence, but we're not really warm, then that would be cold and competent. Well, people actually, they fear that type of person or they envy that type of person. Both of those are not reactions that we actually want to get from our prospective clients, right? We're not trying to do that, engender that. And then the flip is also sometimes we get warm and incompetent, meaning we're very friendly, we're their friend, but they don't see us as being able to actually affect any change. And in that scenario, people actually feel pity and they tend to dismiss us. Right? Yeah. Because, this is a nice person, but they can't get done what I need to get done, right? And the worst of the worst is when you're cold and you're incompetent. And people tend to have contempt or resent that type of a person. So if you think about it that way, what we're going for, though, is that the upper right-hand box, which is where we're both warm and competent, where we're getting admiration and respect. Because, like I said before, in sales situations, people weigh the warmth and the intent more than they actually weigh competence.
It was so interesting. I was every Wednesday night, my husband and I go to dinner at the same place and sit at the bar and eat. And our regular bartender was gone for the week, and we knew he was not going to be there. And the person who was bartending, she was incredibly competent and efficient, but very cold. And we walked out of there not having a good experience because do you know what I mean? Like, she was super efficient and I mean, everything was spot on, but she was a bartender and she didn't have a warm cell in her body, I don't think. And it impacted us. It was like, oh, that's kind of too bad. Jane, weigh in here. And one of the things, and James too, because one of the things I'm really curious about is this issue of intent and warmth and competency. Obviously, we live in a virtual world. You know, can this come across in email? Or are these the kind of conversations, these two questions, advancing the sale, showing your warmth, your intent, your competency, judging the intent on the potential buyer side of it. Can that happen in an email world?
I think so. Absolutely. And I mean, I know from where I sit and how I see some of the activities that are going out for my sales team, the ones that have the most impact are the ones that are looking, you know, that are framed out, in a way where they're trying to connect with a person to understand their organization, to see if there's alignment, if there's an opportunity to help, if there is, if there's it's not just, hey, we've got this special around X, you know, are you interested? Or hey, we reached 300,000 healthcare professionals, I can put you in front of them, you know, call me to learn how. You know, it is more around understanding their business, seeing some kind of alignment and trying to understand and seek to understand deeper if there's an opportunity to help them more. But it's more framed out as a helping versus it is a selling kind of thing. And I think that's where, you know, I've seen people have such a higher connection rate taking that style and that tone versus, you know, a straight kind of telemarketing kind of approach.
Yeah, so I can weigh a little bit of that too. Jane's nailed it here. Is the key is about helping, right? It's about conveying our intent. And the problem, of course, with email and some social channels is that we're losing some of the ability to, right? We don't get the facial expressions. We don't get the paralanguage until we get them on the phone. So we have to be really cognizant of the way we're coming across in the messaging. And the key to doing that is just to make it all about them. Not to make it about you. It's not, hey, I want to show you my stuff. I want to sell you my stuff. It's how can I help you with your challenge? Or other people have had this challenge. Is that something I could help you with, type of a thing? If we just make it all about them, and you'll find your help, you can see little tweaks in your pronouns that you use. Instead of saying you and I, you want to say us and we.
Right.
Those kinds of things in the email, because you got less channels that you're communicating across when you're using an email. So you want to be sure to optimize that message. and so that it's 100%. And of course, that's much easier when you finally make the mental shift to actually only really caring about helping the client. When that happens, it'll just happen naturally. But at first, you know, we're in sales because we're trying to produce a living for us and our family and stuff. And so sometimes we get hung up on ourselves and I want to try to sell this thing, but that's actually counter to the best and the most successful practice. If you just get off yourself for a second and do everything you can to help the client, you'll actually be doing all the right stuff to send all the right signals to your prospect, and they'll pick up on that, and then they're more likely to want to do business with
you. Jane, I'm sure this resonates, obviously resonates with you. I mean, we've talked about your background, sort of, you know, like the three of us, we all ended up being accidental salespeople, and we're all kind of warm. I mean, I would consider myself to be a warm person, and I would consider you to be warm people.
I can vouch for
and
you.
Confident. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but, you know, and so obviously this sort of approach to helping and, you know, understanding the client's needs and in wanting these everything to be successful for them, the campaign to work and solve their challenges. That doesn't resonate with every salesperson though. I mean,
it doesn't. Having been in media my whole career and watched it evolve, I mean, there's a lot of it, the way that you sell is very different now than it was, you know, 15 years ago. And in fact, I mean, this organization that I entered into, you know, just a year ago was known as and recognized as a demand gen company, which is very tactical and very much a product. And in a very short period time frame, we've moved it from a demand gen company to a marketing services company, which is a very different conversation and also a very different relationship, because essentially what we're trying to be is extensions of marketing teams. So so you need to develop a partnership. So a lot of the words we use are more partners. It's partners. You're not a customer, you're a partner. I am vested in your success. And that's what, you know, if we, the sales reps that convey that, and truly, as James said, have that intent. I mean, that is, you know, that is incredibly transparent. A salesperson who's just selling to hit a number, you can see that a mile away, and people don't want to be sold to anymore. They can get all the information they need out on the internet to prepare themselves. By the time they walk through the door or they pick up the phone, they're 75% of the way down the road at least. And so it takes a very different strategy and a different approach. And I think, you know, people want to know that you are vested in their success, and you are going to walk hand in hand and toe to toe with them through the whole process to make sure that, you know, that you know what they invest in with you is going to actually bear fruit.
Getting back to James, your point about the microfacial expressions. I'm a poker player, so I call that a tell. And I think that good salespeople, they have to be able to spot the tells, don't they, Jane? James, right? They have to be able to get that on the other side. Versus sometimes they're so, you know, they just want to get through the pitch, you know, and they're not aware of the tell.
Yeah, your best salespeople have a very high emotional intelligence level, and so they can pick up on those L's, as you say, either in person, face to face, which is, by the way, why I prefer the higher touch of a communication channel you can use, the better, right? So face to face is the best. Maybe video would be, you know, a fallback, maybe just audio, you know, and maybe some kind of a WebEx or something like that. And then you're working your way down the food chain as you start to eliminate the different messaging centers. But your best salespeople, they're kind of naturals actually at understanding. But the good news is that you can learn to be emotionally intelligent. It's not like it's either you have it or you don't. You can learn what these things are, and then you can cultivate your ability to pick up on them with clients, but also to telegraph them yourself.
Yeah, your EQ versus your IQ.
Exactly right.
We're at a little bit of a disadvantage where we do a lot of our sales over the phone. So it is very much those, you still have to recognize those cues, but it's not in a visual capacity. It's all audio. So it takes, you get to tweak that kind of skill set. I think everything still applies, but it's just, you don't have that, you don't have the luxury of being face to face as much with the solutions that we sell as you would be, you know, would have been 10 years ago. A lot of our clients prefer to do business over the phone or via WebEx. And so that's where we've got to maximize our effectiveness.
Yeah, be a good listener.
Yeah. Just to add a little to that, I think that your best performers will also, when they hear something that, even if it's not spoken directly or said directly, but they can tell in the tonality, you know, they'll call it out. They'll just say, hey, you know, the force is telling me there's something, you know, not right here, or that I'm not quite hitting the mark here. Can you help me out a little bit? And once the customer realizes that you're actually just trying to understand them as best as you can, that opens it up and makes it safe for them to share what they're actually thinking. It's when the customer's holding their cards really close to their chest because they don't trust you. Well, that makes selling dysfunctional. So we want to make it safe for them to share whatever the truth is. Even if the truth doesn't benefit us as a salesperson, we still want to know what it is and make it safe for them to share that, because then we could do something with it.
Well, believe it or not, we're winding down our conversation and our time together. So before we finish up, James, I'm curious, is there a sequel in your future? The Perfect Close 2?
Well, not The Perfect Close 2, but something close. So we have a workbook that's coming out in December. So I don't have the bandwidth to do as many workshops as I would like to do. So I have to just handpick the ones that I'm willing to do. So the workbook is intended to let people run their own workshops with their own team. So for example, if Jane wanted to run a workshop, she could just go ahead and get the workbooks for her team and run, and the workbook tells you how to run the workshop. So that we'll have that out in December, and then I'm working on two other books. One is on tactical sales prospecting, which is about 50% done, and then another one that's in the early stages about sales motivation.
I see another episode in our future in 2019.
All right. We can get the band back together again.
Get the band back together. Well, they all have reunion tours, so there you go.
Right.
James, Jane, thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, it was great.
Our pleasure.
Always fun.
Yeah. You can learn more about James Muir and his book, The Perfect Close, at www.puremuir.com. And be sure to follow him on LinkedIn and on Twitter at B2B_sales tips. Learn more about Jane Bogue at intelligentmedia.com and follow her on Twitter at, of course, Jane in Maine. You can share your thoughts or comments on Twitter at hashtag What's My Tagline, or visit the program page on healthcarenightradio.com. Have a topic related to our show you want to hear about, or you're an expert who'd like to be on the show? Reach out to me on Twitter at Carol Flagg, or email me at carol@healthcarenowradio.com. Until next time, I'm Carol Flagg, and I want to know, what's your tagline?